Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 39. Hello,
everybody. So nice to welcome you to a wonderful opportunity in which I am honored to be able to have a discussion with the wonderful Osprey Auriel Lake, who has written this amazing book called The Story Is in Our Bones, and with a wonderful painting by an indigenous person of two women bending over, and are they planting seeds? They're blessing the earth, receiving blessings from the earth. I'm not sure what it is they are holding there, but they are little luminous kind of, I'm not sure what, you know. But they're really great, and they have nice robes, and the wonderful stars are up in the sky. I think it's quite nice, really. Very energetic also, and powerful. So she's written this wonderful book, and I have read quite a bit of it, and I like it very much. And she is a marvelous person who won my heart when she began with the dominant cultural worldview. And she's gradually, and with actual living examples and a lot of storytelling collected from all over the world, she helps us try to correct our highly alienated worldview that is destroying the planet, actually, and with which we are destroying ourselves. And she weaves together ecological, mythical, political, and cultural understandings, and shares her experiences working with global leaders, climate justice activists, indigenous peoples, and systems thinkers, and a new way, summoning a new way of being and thinking in the Anthropocene. I'm not sure, maybe it's the obscene, which includes transforming the interlocking crises of colonialism, racism, patriarchy, capitalism, and ecocide to build thriving earth communities for all. Welcome to the podcast, you wonderful person, Osprey. Ospreys are like an eagle, right? It's like an eagle. It's a kind of smaller eagle, a little bit smaller and more precise. And it lives mostly on fish. It's mostly on the seashore, right? Exactly. So it mostly deals with, it mostly fishes. And Auriel Lake, how wonderful. A founder, oh yes, I should have mentioned We Can, which is Women's Earth, I forgot.
Women's Earth and Climate Action Network.
And Climate Activist
Network. We Can,
Wonderful. The web, it's a web of Spider-Woman in her modern thing. Actually, good Spider-Woman. People get nervous when they hear spider, but this is a good one. It reminds me of a dream I once had, but I won't impose that right now. So, Osprey, how are you today?
I'm very good, and it's such an honor to be here with you. Thank you so much that we could have this conversation.
Well, that's, the honor is all mine, my dear, really. And you're so activist, and you have been everywhere, but you're so young. How can you have done all of this at such a tender age? I could easily be your dad or practically granddad, I think. Really? And you've been, because... starting out from, she has a marvelous thing she recounts in this book when she was 4 or 5, when you stopped, your parents dragged you to a Hopi ceremony in New Mexico, I guess. Maybe you'd like to
Yes.
tell us in your own words that wonderful experience instead of me
Sure.
recounting it from your book. Please tell us. It was
Yeah,
amazing. I
yeah.
was amazed reading it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, just a little context, at the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, we really are very engaged on a daily basis with very practical matters of, advocating at the UN climate talks for climate justice. We do deforestation projects, forest protection. We've been working a lot to stop the expansion of fossil fuels. So everything from like on the ground projects and programs with women leaders around the world to, high level meetings with government officials and financial institutions, doing everything we can to protect our earth. And why I mention that sort of as a segue to your question is because, while I'm deeply engaged in those affairs and that's my day job, if you will, with our network, it's so important to go upstream and to look at how did we get into these multiple crises and how did we find ourselves in the what many scholars are calling a polycrisis around the world, and how do we deal with these systems of oppression and change them and harms to the earth. And so in my book, it's really an upstream look at worldviews and how they inform our political landscape and our psychology and our traumas and our well-being and our harmony or disharmony with nature. And so I opened the book with, in part, about, giving this big landscape of looking up into the stars at night and that reflection of where we are in time and space for that bigger view. And in that telling, it also reminded me how, when we look at the night sky and we see the North Star, the whole night sky, the stars revolve in a circle around the North Star. And I've just always been fascinated with that. And, how, throughout, human history, people have looked to the North Star. It has been different stars in different eras, but, most recently, the North Star. And it came to me how the North Star is sort of like the belly button of the sky, the center of the body of the sky that we see. And it made me remember something from my childhood where I had been with my family in Germany, living there for 2 years when my father was stationed in the military there. On our way home, my parents, we made stops along the way. I think we were in a Volkswagen Bug, driving from with my sister and I from the East Coast to the West Coast to California. And along the way, we stopped in different places because my parents are, were very interested in other cultures. So we stopped somewhere in the Southwest. I'm not sure where. I asked my mother many years later, but she didn't know where we were. So somewhere in the Southwest, where, as people might know, the indigenous peoples there, I'm not sure if it was Hopi or other, I like I say, I don't know, but kindly, whether it was in New Mexico and Arizona, they kindly opened their doors at time for people not in their communities to be part of a public dance. And so this is what I participated in. I was about 3 years old, and I don't remember a lot, but what I had remembered is that there was a rain dance, which we probably heard different stories how there are rain dances in that part of the world. And this one dancer shot an arrow into the sky to make prayers of the thunderclouds to bring the rains. And I saw the arrow going up into the sky, up into the stars, and returning and landing in my belly button, landing in my stomach. And for me,
I'm so amazed by that.
I mean, it's just, when I say it out loud now, it's like, this is really very wild. But, for me, this was just, I just had this experience. There was nothing abnormal to me about it. It wasn't scary. It was just like, oh, I'm having this experience, and I remember being really moved and mesmerized by the music and the dancing and the beautiful regalia of the dancers. and just being pulled into this incredible feeling and energy that I had never experienced before. And so then, I told my parents, like this is amazing, this happened, just reporting like this happened. And they were very concerned and, being protective parents, very, they're doing what they thought was best. And they were telling me, no, that didn't happen. That the dancer, is just simulating, that
Anyway, I
they're
don't
shooting
want to hit
arrow,
it.
like they're not really shooting an arrow, that they're
Adhesive
being too
arrow,
dangerous.
yes.
But for me, like I had this experience. So we sort of were in disagreement. I just remember being really frustrated.
And you were not giving in. You did not give in to this parade.
I was just frustrated that somehow this wasn't being received, And so, and then I reflect also in my book, Heather, I have a photograph of my sister and I standing with my parents when we were at that place. And I'm not like angry, upset, but I'm just like looking off into the distance,
You're
someplace
from
else,
another world.
in
You're
another world.
early. You're an early indigo, as they say.
And so then the last thing I remember, because it's just little pieces of memory. I mean, I was quite young, but I do remember one an older man, I believe from the community, I can't remember his face or anything, coming down to my level, like whether he was kneeling or squatting and looking at me and me explaining to me what happened. He said yes. All I remember from what that exchange was somebody heard what I said and agreed with me. And then that was it. And then I never spoke about it again to my parents because, the reflection back was this was not something to talk about. But I just assumed for a great period of time that there was this arrow, this, lightning arrow in my stomach. And I thought it was a really magical and cool thing. And that was just it. And of course, years later, I had forgotten all about it until I started getting into this writing and that. The reflection of looking at the North Star and seeing that as umbilicus suddenly reminded me of this story. And then I went back, and asked my mother, who barely, remembered any, details to help me, other than we had stopped, she had remembered going and in the journey. But anyway, so the reason I brought it up at the beginning of the book is because I wanted to show some reflections on worldview. Of course, I go through a very sort of academic explanation of what is worldview and why it's important. But beyond the academic expression, I wanted to also share with people personal experience of being in a different worldview and being having a transformative moment with nature, with life. And because I think many of us have these experiences and we can write them off because our dominant society doesn't hold them with value or for a myriad of reasons, but like how important it is to keep that part of us alive, in our animate cosmologies, our current mythologies. And so, yeah, I wanted just to share that as a way of inviting others to remember and connect with those important moments in our life and other ways of knowing and other ways of seeing the world.
Absolutely. It's amazing, actually. Actually, it's blowing my mind even more now hearing you say it than when I read it. And it connects to something that happened in India in ancient time. The arrow at the thunder, the thunder arrow idea.
Yes.
So the king of the Vedic gods, his name is Indra, and he was known as someone who held something called a vajra. And that vajra was a symbol of a thunderbolt, and therefore, because in sort of ancient people, lightning was the most powerful energy, they thought, and but yet it has a kind of element of violence about it, and it's in a thundercloud, and the arrow. And it's penetrating, so it's a very male patriarchal kind of thing, actually. And the fact that as a small child, you caught that in the navel chakra is incredible. And it indicates Vajra comes to mean in both Shaivite and Buddhist Tantra, the unbreakable, but the unbreakable is no longer violence. The unbreakable is what they call clear light of the void, the infinite energy of creativity associated with feminine, a female, the mother, the creatrix of life, where, as in the famous words of Mark Epstein, which looking at his wife after their first childbirth, I think, he said, "My goodness, this woman can turn tuna fish into a baby." Incredible creativity of woman, and the navel chakras, where the sun fire, solar fire, and in old tantric things, blazes up and melts the moon, which is associated with the male, actually, in tantra, opposite from what people usually think. But anyway, it just blew my mind, because catching it in the navel is bringing the energy to where it actually makes it creates things, rather than destructive, turns even destructive energy into creativity. So naturally, a woman who, as a young girl, would somehow subliminally bringing from previous life, of course, in my type of view, some awareness of the actual power of the world, which is the female creative power, not the destructive power, would go on to found WeCan and write a worldview transformational work. This being, I'm sure, one of many more that will come. It's amazing, and it's amazing that you thought of it when you were just starting to write. And then amazing. I'm amazed.
Oh.
I pay. I namaste. I have to say.
Namaste. Thank you so much for seeing that and pulling that forward. I
Yes,
appreciate
and
it.
it's the task of today, isn't it? In other words, we are just seeing the second potential Mother Goddess president thrown down by the guys, just barely this time, though. It was no mandate, it was just barely, actually. But they threw it down again, and they put one of their own in there to make more destruction. And
Yes.
they're going to have to weather it now. But the navel chakra can absorb it all, is the point, They're not going to. The Mother Goddess is not going to let the thing place die, not at all. Did
No.
you know what Buddha did when he defeated the demons and attained enlightenment? First thing he did before he said a word is he touched the earth. He was meditating, but he moved his hand from the meditating, thing where you put your hands together, palms together like that. And his right hand he put down and touched the earth. It's called Bhumisparsha Mudra, the earth-touching gesture. And actually, he started a dialogue with Mother Earth, actually, under a tree. He was under a tree, and he touched her. People think of it as calling to witness that she's going to sort of say he has a right to be a Buddha. But actually, it's more like she's the one who's going to get the job done, of changing the world where everyone can equally be enlightened enough to live realistically and happily, Anyway, never
No,
mind. But it's wonderful.
it's beautiful that you bring that forward, because this is such a challenging time. We're really on the cusp of
It used
so
to be.
much destruction, but also, as you know, so much potentiality also,
Yes.
because those things go
Oh,
together.
absolutely.
And it reminded me what you're talking about, the fire and the thunder. It's making me think more. I wanted to, if it's all right, briefly share a story with you,
Yes, please.
because I just came back a few weeks ago from Azerbaijan in Baku, because that's where the UN climate talks were held this year. And
Oh, you went there. Oh, my goodness, you're so brave.
I go through the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. We've been going to the climate talks for over a decade because we're very involved in the negotiation process as civil
Sure.
society, and then also making sure that these powerful women that need to be in leadership roles have the opportunity to go. Indigenous, Black and Brown women, underserved communities have the opportunity to go meet with
Yeah.
governments and advocate for their communities. They're
Yes.
on the front lines of these crises.
Wonderful.
So I was in Azerbaijan, and most of the time when we're at these climate talks, the entire time, we're in these buildings that have no nature, no windows, nothing. I mean, you're just, meeting and negotiating and lobbying and having actions and
Really,
wind
there are no
farms and wind
windows.
farms. So it's a very intense thing, but I always usually try to take a day here or there to go be on the land or do something, with the culture of these places, because we go around the world to these different climate negotiations. And so I did a little bit of research, and I was always enthralled with this part of the world. You may know more about it than me. I mean, I'm just, beginning
No,
to
I don't.
quickly do some research, but it's such a huge crossroads up into the Caucasus Mountains and, the Scythians and all of the Zoroastrians. I mean, it's a place that has been, conquered, if you will, and colonized many times over, layers and layers,
Oh yeah,
because
Baku, you're sure. It's on the
along the Sea of
Caspian,
Arabs,
right? It's on the
on the
Caspian,
Caspian Sea.
right, in the sort of the coastal side of the Caucasus,
Correct.
between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. It's on
Exactly.
the west side of Caspian,
It's
right?
on the west side of the Caspian, and it's in the Baku's on the eastern side of Azerbaijan. And I
Yeah.
learned that Azerbaijan means place of fire, which is why I wanted to bring it up right now, because
Yes, right. Yeah.
one of the things of the natural attributes, certainly around Baku, perhaps in
Yeah.
other places in Azerbaijan, is that there's so much fossil fuel in the ground, oil and gas, that there are places in the mountains where
Yeah.
water literally comes out of the mountains.
Yeah,
And
wow.
so, it's been called the place of fire. And I learned, that, of course, in pre-colonized, pre-patriarchal times, of course, people from all over the world and the people who live there went there to pray with the fire deities, to honor this fire
Yes.
out of the earth.
Right.
And so one day when I was there, I took some of our delegates to this fire temple, which is on the outskirts of the city of Baku, to go
Really?
see this fire temple. That's,
If I mean it's Zoroastrian?
yes.
Oh,
And
wow.
so it
Okay.
has Zoroastrian roots. And it was in this stone structure that they turned some of it into like a museum for people to learn about this fire temple.
Okay.
And of
Right.
course, it's built upon ancient sites even before the Zoroastrians,
Right.
because of indigenous populations there, which saw, of course, saw and went there to pray to the holy goddesses and gods of the fire, the deities from
Right.
the fire
Right.
from the ground. And then there's also a Hindu period, and there are layers of people.
Sure, totally.
So in this complex where there's the center fire, which, by the way, was natural at one point, but because of, it's a petro state, and the huge extraction of fossil fuels of the ground, they
Normally,
now have to,
yes.
through human means, pipeline in there to produce gas. So there's that going on. But in this complex, they made different beautiful old building sites into like different museum rooms where you could see sort of the progression of time from the ancient peoples. And so you go into each room, and there's like spiritual relics and stories, very elegant as a museum is on display. So you go through learning about the Zoroastrian period and their deities and how they prayed at this temple of fire. Then you go and see the Hindu goddesses, gods of fire. You go to the next room. All this to say, you get to the final room, and this is why I'm telling the story, because it was just such an example of our time. The final room, on equal stature, shown in equal holiness and beauty, is all these images of oil drills at drilling into the ground, and the petroleum industry. And it
Right.
hit me so heavy at that point, like
Yes.
going from coming to make offerings and prayers at the fire temple to extracting and exploiting that has created this destruction, and the elevation of the god and goddess of greed and consumerism and our extractive economy sort of shown in the museum as the story. And it
Incredible.
was just really hit me, especially being at COP29 with the negotiations and how difficult they were this year, and how in the beginning of my book, I talk a lot about how all these stories from around the world, whether they're from the Amazon and the jaguar stealing the fire and bringing it to the humans, or when we look at
Yes.
Greek story of Prometheus and how he has to steal the fire
Yes.
and bring it to the people. Or here where I live, I live in close to Miwok territories, there's a whole story of the hummingbird and how the hummingbird goes to the sun and steals a little bit of the sun to bring back to the people. And all over the world, when I did this research on fire, the element of fire, what astounded me, I mean, at least in 30 stories that I read, some I share in my book, that of all the elements, the earth, the water, the air, the fire, only in all of our ancient traditions, only the element of fire is stolen and not freely given by the deities. And I share the reflection on how, because fire, of course, is wonderful. It heats our food, it warms our home. I mean, fire is our friend as an element, but it's the only element that across the world our ancestors warned us about and said, you have to, really think about this. The deities weren't too sure we should have fire in all of its, components, energy, and so forth. And I just always love that, when we look at our ancestral roots and look at these stories, how we have so much to learn from, how to live in reciprocity and how to live in a balanced way with the earth. And so much of that knowledge is in these ancient stories. And I just loved how there were all these universal warning stories in all the cultures around the world that you had to handle fire very carefully.
Of course, of course. What do you think about the thesis that is around? I'm not even sure who originally promoted it, but there is a kind of thesis that the mastery of fire by humans is what enabled the human brain to magnify itself so hugely compared to the primates that we're closely connected to, because by using fire, the amount of internal physical energy involved in digestion, like that cows have to do to eat grass and others are, and monkeys are eating like vegetable thing, the fire enabled to cook things, which was therefore replaced internal energies in the nervous system having to do with absorb the food. So it enabled this higher absorption of food and created an energy surplus that enabled the brain then to expand enormously. Did you ever hear that?
No, this is the first time I'm hearing this. Wow, I'll have to look
It's
into it
amazing.
now.
And in the Vedas, in the mantras of the Vedas, that the Indians do, very ancient sort of thing. Connected, very much connected to Zoroastrianism, because Zoroaster wrote in a language. Persian is like a Sanskrit, has a very close connection. And so the first verse of the Veda and in every ceremony is the invitation of Agni, who is the fire god, Agni, the Greek ignition, it's still there in English even and in Greek and so on. Agni mile purohitam yajasya devamutpijam. So the fire is considered a god itself, which enables the humans to communicate with the gods. So that although it's not in the way it's not an element like earth and water and wind or air, but it somehow it is moves among them. It's the transmutational process, So there's a really big thing about fire. So as you were talking, I got the view. It's a, I tried to reconcile in my mind what I think a lot of environmentalists think is terrible, which is that Abu Dhabi and Qatar and then Baku, took over the COP, the conversation of the parties, meetings. So the oil industry, it takes over the attempt to restrain the oil industry. But maybe that's in a way all right, in the sense of it's more and more making them face their responsibility by the overuse of this marvelous thing, which is fire, What do you think? Can we say that? In other words, by bringing them, you mentioned upstream, you mentioned that word. And it just made me think. I've been to conference. I was what used to go to a lot of conferences with oil executives, where they're sort of greenwashing themselves by going to a group in from Norway called the Performance Theater. And I used to get invited, but I was only given like 7 minutes to get after these executives and Shell and BP and people like that. And I used to say, "Why are you guys doing that? Why don't you do renewables and then you'll still be big companies?" And then always the thing they used to say is, "The only thing we understand is upstream." That term for them means actual pumping, exploring for more stranded resource, which will become eventually stranded resources, all this crazy thing. So they're stuck on the upstream. They even tried to pretend to me they didn't care about gas stations. They just outsourced the selling of the retail, and all they knew was all upstream, when they would be applauding me when I was telling them that in their future life, they'd be a polluted fish downstream from a refinery, all like wriggling in agony because of all the pollutants in the water. And then they would clap for that because they were greenwashing themselves, And yet they would insist that that's all they could do, and rather than even invest in solar or any other kind of energy production, So then, of course, I was joining the general feeling of like Al Gore so mad, right, about the oil people supposedly running this conversation at the parties or whatever it's called, the whatever COP stands
Conference
for,
of parties.
right? And but maybe it's good that they are having to actually cope with it and realize that there's going to someday the debt has to be paid to the earth, to the people who are the southern hemisphere people who are suffering so badly and so on, the poor, the people, the as you put it, the rights violated people who live in Cancer Alley and such places, that this energy industry is so destructive of,
Yeah, I mean it's well, I find that certainly things are not going in the direction that they need to by a
They
long
don't
shot.
seem to be, but then, but do you what? How much contact did you get with those kind of oil people when you go to, for
Well, I mean
example, someone like you, who is the apps person who can catch the arrow in the navel chakra? What? How much time do they have to be exposed to you?
Well, I think there's like several layers. So,
Please tell me.
I just to tease apart a few things. I mean, there is the Conference of Parties, the UNFCCC space that happens every year, the climate talks. And so it's one arena where this conversation is going on. But of course, that's only one place. And why it's important is because all countries, as you know, can meet there. It's really the only global conference we have where all countries on equal footing can discuss the climate
Yes.
crisis. And then
Yeah.
all throughout the year, there's many other things that should be done. I don't think that we're going to find the solution at the COP. I just think it's an important place because it's part of the ecosystem of the
Yes.
conversation.
Oh,
And I think
yeah.
what surfaces there is even though it's about the climate and everyone in any ways supposedly working to get us off the fossil fuels into a renewable energy future. I mean, there's so many other things going on there that have to do with conversation about the root causes of the climate crisis. So, as an
Absolutely.
example, we're talking there often about indigenous rights, or how do we end colonization, or how are we going to have gender responsive climate policies? So, conversations about gender and really amazing things are happening, on the sidelines that are pushing the conversation forward. But in terms of the actual, fossil fuel industry, I think one of the hardest things that has happened at the COP and has probably increased, you mentioned it, which I'm so glad that you did, but it's actually continuing to increase, which is the numbers of fossil fuel lobbyists who are in the negotiating spaces. So this year at Baku, there was over 1,700 lobbyists from the fossil fuel industry, which is larger than country delegations combined. And so,
I
you're
hate to think of the gas of all their private planes.
And the fact is, they're there because we've been in a petrol state. They're there making deals. They're making fossil
Of
fuel
course,
expansion deals. So
yeah.
there has been a big push, this year, and there has been for so many years. But I think it's getting really stronger for many organizations like ours and civil society to go to the UN Secretariat and basically said, look, you need to have some guidelines about how many fossil fuel lobbyists are here. And also, we need to have these negotiations take place in countries that, at least as their bottom line bar, agree to transitioning off of fossil fuels in sincerity. I mean, we're running out of time here. We need that commitment. So, as we see these tensions of extremes in weather events, extremes in authoritarian regimes, extremes in intensities of hardships. As you know very well, as a master teacher, you know, like it also brings forward, you know, more love and fierce love and compassion and visions about what we should be doing. So, you know, we're, you know, and I don't think everything is, you know, in a neat binary and all tied up like this, but I do think that we're also seeing the strength of our movements growing stronger and stronger because of the inequities, the harms to Mother Earth, the harms to communities. People are building a different reality, and we need to feed that and to support that, while at the same time, we continue to intervene with these guys who are bent on destroying the Earth, because we need to kind of get that to slow down enough to let this other world arise. And we're in that tension right now.
So 1,700 lobbyists. So how many people, like we can type lobbyists, like stories in our bones type people? How what's that number? You
I
know,
don't, that's a really good
the
question.
drawdown yourself, you know, the whole gang, you know, Al Gore. How many people is he? Are you all coming?
That's a really good question.
I
I
didn't get
actually,
to go. You know what I mean? Like, why can't
you
Exxon have made some
come
of these
next
where I
time.
could get a ticket, right?
Come to COP30 in Brazil. It'll be amazing. What's really exciting is that next year's COP will be in Brazil, which I think will be incredible, because we're everyone's sort of gearing up, you know, to be out of sort of these oppressive governments we've been in for the last few years at the COP at the different locations, because the presidency, meaning the country that the COP is held in, has a huge impact. And, you know, being in Brazil will be with Lula, who of course is also doing oil deals, but also has a much better progressive record
Yes, of
and
course.
an amazing job in protecting the
Yes.
Amazon, you know, since
You know,
he's been in office.
I
And of
wonder
course,
if, you know, in your museum there, for example, you should have a grant, we can should, to create a next the next exhibit. In other words, it went from ancient thing, you know, then finally ended up with oil drills going, you know. Then what's the next thing? And then how what is the Garden of Eden restored, you know, exhibit? And what's the energy system of that and so on, you know, and make a big exhibit there, like outside the museum, and put up a big, you know, geodesic dome or something, and make a big thing there so that in Brazil, you know, so that, and then the executives, the lobbyists can all go there, make it attractive, have a rock group, I don't know, invite Taylor Swift or whoever they would like, and have a special concert for them where they go and they have a little fun, but then they also get some information. And maybe they won't be, you know, like considered demons. They won't be in the history of the demonic takeover of the planet and the near destruction of it, but they'll be honored for having brought the planet up to a certain point in some way, you know. And you know, in other words, some way to sort of, because here's the thing, isn't it, that what I love about your story is that you're saying that everybody will be happy when they stop being so stupid and destructive. The males will also finally be happy. The reason they're so destructive is it's like Trump, you know. He grabs everybody's pussy because he doesn't know how to enjoy any one of them. He thinks it's a domination game. You just grab it, you know, and then that's all you can get because he was deprived of nursing when he was little. If you read Mary Trump's book, you know, his mother collapsed after he was born, you know, due to probably the oppressiveness of the Nazi husband, you know, the KKK husband, you know, the father. And so she finally just collapsed, and he didn't get normal maternal because she was like practically a nursing situation herself. And so he's like very frustrated, you know. And people say that the way he constantly talks and the shape of his mouth indicates someone who has a strong desire to suck on something. And
No,
it may be the case. I'm not an analyst, but I'm just saying your story is so great, and it's like the arrow in the navel, you know. It will. So in a way, this can we consider, in other words, the current absolute catastrophe on the planet that we're currently looking at. If we just look conventionally, It's a sign of the desperation of the old patriarchal, dominating, destructive thing. And by the way, was Rihanna Eisler there with you? Was she at the lake? Is she? I'm sure she's a part of WECAN.
Oh, I love
You mentioned her
Rihanna.
as a friend, right? She's your
Yes,
friend.
yes. Rihanna and I have been friends for many years, and I love her dearly. And I, of course, mention her in my book for some
Yes.
research that she has done. And
Sold out. And Maria Jimbuta, as you mentioned also, which is really important. Although you said 10,000 years, I thought her figure was 90,000 years in the Danube area of unfortified towns and very few crushed skulls with weapons lying nearby and so forth. I remember that as 90,000 as opposed to 10,000 of the patriarchy. Come the get motorcycle gangs coming in from Central Asia on their chariots and beating everybody up, which it's been ever since, right? Kind of the dominating and
Yeah,
going towards
I
that thesis, you know, which and so now we're on the brink of really replacing that with partnership. And also that I think the men are afraid that it means some matriarchy means some kind of being just bossed around by mom. Do you know what I mean? Rather than actually having a lover partner, you know, as a partner, but a respected one, you know, not a dominated one. And therefore one who might actually be happy and therefore might allow them true happiness instead of fake grabbing, you know.
Yes. I mean, I think that's the potentiality of this time, which is exciting, is that, we do need to come out of this period of, patriarchy, conquering, colonization, the capitalistic extractive economy that comes with it. And I think this is, what this awakening period is. And many ancient cultures talking about this time being the time of purification. Mother Earth is trying to heal herself from how humans have been treating the Earth as, our living mother and not being respected. And
Right,
I
right.
saw those connections in the book around the violence against the goddess, the violence against women, the violence of the Earth are all intertwined, and how we're really healing from that, both men and women and people across the gender spectrum, and how hard that has been. And so I think that it's a lot about, how do we heal from this false, because it's not true, this false sense of disconnect from the mother, disconnect from the earth, disconnect from our earth lineage that is in the dominant society. And how do we actually, remember and recall and rejuvenate our living cosmologies, our earth connected cosmologies? Because I think this sense of orphanage from belonging, orphanage from the earth, orphanage from our own ancestralities that were indigenous to different places, is all part of, this maturing process we're in as humanity to, reclaim, our connection with the earth after this very difficult period of time. And, I would also in that context, really lift up, indigenous peoples and the fact that 80% of the biodiversity left on Earth is in indigenous lands and territories and stewarded by them because of that worldview of being connected to the Earth. And so I think this is part of the overall transformation we're in, is how do we move from this ideology of supremacy, whether it's white supremacy or male supremacy over the female or humans over nature, all these different ideologies of dominance and hierarchy and supremacy have really got us here, and we really need to dismantle those systems and let them go to the fire, if you will, to get transformed and changed into something else, into a prayer fire that is of egalitarian societies, which of course Rhiannon is so beautiful at describing, and all of that beautiful work and calling upon what I like to say are pre-patriarchal and pre-colonized ancestors, wherever we're from, and to remember, we're also people, we have different lineages, but many of us come from peoples who made stone circles throughout Europe and, had the Beltane fires and, prayed with the rivers and had all kinds of mythologies that need to be remembered and metabolized into a new form for today. But all of that is so important to the moment that we're in and looking at things and learning about life in very, very different ways. But I really agree with you. There's a tremendous amount of healing that needs to go on because of the trauma that people have experienced from patriarchal society, women and men alike. And so, yeah, I think that While on the one hand, we have to fight fiercely, we also have to be so compassionate because people need healing deeply, and it causes violence when they're not
How
healed.
would you, what would we can do if we can had a news network to compete with Fox News, where you would make this vision something attractive to the guys, to these terrible guys? This is my key. I think that's like, why is it that Fox News is supposed to be more sexy? Why is it that Fox News attracts it? Why is it on in every airport and every house for 12 hours a day in red state America? And every bar and every airport and bus station, it's Fox News all the time. And why is that? Why, what, how would you do, remember Al Gore tried to create, what was it called? Current news, or he tried to create a thing and nobody would invest in it. And he did, he got an Academy Award for The Inconvenient Truth. And then he tried to, he did have a television network. And sorry, and then he couldn't maintain it financially, even though he's on the board of like Apple and all these, these big Silicon Valley companies. He couldn't fund it, and he sold the bandwidth to Al Jazeera, and it was promptly kicked off all the cable distributors. As they kicked off Al Jazeera, right? So, how do we? How do we do that? How do we, and that's what we have to do. That's how we're losing this. They're desperately brainwashing everybody that they can't live without them, you see. And then, and they got the, they're getting black men to vote for somebody who wants to reinstitute the kinds of slavery. They got Latino men to vote for somebody who wants to kick out all their grandparents and grandchildren. I mean, it's crazy that we have, we don't have answer to that. And even the wonderful Kamala, and I have to confess, my wife and I were 100% wrong. We were sure she was going to succeed easily, easily. And actually, even I felt that way about Hillary after the Democratic convention in 2016. It was so uplifting after a complete misery experience of the other convention, which was such a joke, And then somehow it turned around. And even these people, they used to get them on the basis of the right to life fake thing, pro that somehow pro-life was this one issue, meanwhile ruin everybody's life once they're born. And but they're pro-life, right? With that false wedge issue, right? So then we had the wedge issue, thanks to Mr. Alito. We had the real wedge issue, but all the women didn't vote for it anyway. Right, especially the white ones didn't, and because they have Fox News drumming in their ear all the time, and they thought, oh, prices will go down. Oh, what, he's going to do tariffs, and the tomatoes are going to be 30% more immediately. Nobody told us. There's even, you hear a few voices piping up like that now. So how can we counter the power of media to get people to be more reasonable and realistic? And just follow their common sense, really.
Yeah.
That's my challenge to the, in other words, the story's in our bones, but how do we get our bones onto TV?
I love
How do we do it?
it.
I
Okay.
mean, this book is a great start. It's what, that's why I'm asking you, it's a great start. And the other great thing that has happened for our side, James Murdoch and Mrs. James Murdoch, who I forget her first name. I don't know if I ever heard it actually, but I met him once, so I remember it. They defeated Rupert's effort to kick them out of the future of the funds, that media, power, and not let Lachlan just complete continue the absolute BS, that they've been dishing out for since mid Reagan. They've had the ear of the American mass in what we call, what I call Goebbels' wet dream of a meeting. Remember, poor Goebbels, all he had was a newsreel along with a movie, like a Weimar Republic artist produced movie. He would have a little newsreel for some fake Nuremberg rallies and things. He didn't have 24 hours a day, or 14 about waking hours a day at least, in every home in the red states, who never saw a comedy channel. They never see Bill Maher. They don't see HBO. in those red states. They don't even the cable companies don't even allow it. And how do we fight back? Al couldn't do it alone, because he's, you know, he's it, somehow we're, you know, she said, the greatest story ever told. That's your story. She was advertising the stories in our bones. The greatest, you show here, prove this is the greatest story ever told. You prove it. This book does. That's why I love it. That's why I'm so honored to speak to you. But on the other hand, we have to go beyond scolding them. We have to figure out how to entice them and to make them realize, feel something in their hearts that, you know, that will be more fun, you know, than all this like guy stuff, you know, and like, well, I just grabbed somebody. I just grabbed somebody in the dressing room. Like, what is that? Just, they don't know how to have fun, those people. They don't. Third trophy wife is not doing the trick for them, because she's not really happy. It's like that, you know. No one. Did you see the inauguration of in 2016, 2017? Did you see the dance of the royal couple? But did you see her body language in that? He was like a bear hug, you know, like, and she was like this. Did you see that? She wasn't snuggling in there. No one was like that.
I really see how you know, this is also the invitation of the book, The Story Is in Our Bones, is because it's about, you know, looking at where we need to come from in our worldviews to embrace this moment, because we have arrived here because of a long history of building up to this moment. So, you know, just pointing out a Trump or whoever isn't really, it's highly important. And of course, you know, as an individual, but also as an organization, we were like mortified by the results of the election. So real time, real people being harmed, real people are going to get deported. There's going to be a lot of hardships. People are going to go hungry because food prices are going to go up and all that stuff, which we have to deal
They'll
with.
learn, you know, they'll learn a bit of a lesson, some of
You know,
them.
it's daily life that, you know,
I
we're going to deal with. So I think there will be, you know, we need to realize that there's going to be people who voted for Trump and are in that mindset. I said it's voting for Trump, but it's also a mindset. You know, it's not
Right.
a human being. And so, you know, I was sharing with our team how, you know, we also need to be very big right now, because those people are going to need a tent to belong to when they wake up and realize this isn't what they thought. And
Right.
this is a time to not be pointing fingers and judgmental, but a time to, you know, keep our values, stand strong, and be welcoming to
Sure.
people who are going to be suffering a lot, even if they were thinking one thing and another thing happened. So I think it's also like our positioning right now of our own heart, our own state of mind, our own place of saying we need to have a lot of compassion as people wake up to a lot of pain, because things are going to get really difficult in
They are, they
this
are. But you know
geopolitical
something, that
landscape. It's
if
already
she,
hard, and it's just going to get harder. And so
yeah,
how do we create
but
space?
and then, you know, since she told that, she had did that amazing speech in the convention, where she said, "Man, you're going to be part of the greatest story ever told," and she was practically ecstatic, you know, and it really did. You could feel it, you know, and I think everybody did feel it. But then after that, whoever was consulting, who she didn't consult with you, she didn't consult with me. She had some professionals meeting her and buying a lot of TV ads, and they were totally relying on, you better do it or you're going to be in big trouble, because this guy's no good. That's all. And she didn't even say, I would do a different thing from. She could. Nobody suggested to her. She could walk, march into the Oval Office right after the convention and say, Joe, I'm younger than you, and not that much, but enough. And I have to tell people, I'm going to do some dimming things you didn't do. So don't take it wrong. I love you. I love everything you did. But there's more things I'm going to do, and I'm going to have to criticize what you didn't do. And so sorry, but you know, and yeah, he would say, absolutely, go for it. Because he would recognize that, because he's a real good politician. But, the kind of people who counsel political leaders, they're all one kind of people. It's like James Carlin, Who did he marry? Mary Madeline, who was Reagan's person, or some other right, Joe W's guy, Reagan, that's too old, W's guy. And they all get their cut of any TV ad. And TV ads talk about how bad the other people are, not attractive. And but her greatest story ever told was attractive. But where was the greatest story? She didn't tell it after that. So then I think we would have won easily still, but who jumps in? The other bad guy, the other weird, frustrated guy who jumping up and down like that, showing his midriff off with his $300 billion midriff. And even Trump looks jealous and angry at him. They're not going to get along, those two guys, because he's a lot richer than Trump. Trump, will want to get his money. It's like Hitler took the money of von Schlesien and all these people after they paid for him, thinking he was an idiot and they could control, the wealthy people in the Weimar Republic. And the socialists, by the way, they didn't vote in 32. They boycotted. Because precisely they said, let them see how much they're going to suffer. Well, how many suffered how much for the next 13 years? We had to bomb the crap out of the entire country. The rest of the world did. So in other words, people, once they get power, disempowered in misery and suffering, they don't have any more strength, So anyway, that's all. I'm just, I love you and I love the book, and I really think that, we can, and I love We Can. I don't know anything about it. I love to help it any way I can, being horrible, however horrible, old white guy myself. Although, actually, who knows, really? Nobody knows exactly their lineage. I didn't do 23andMe. I have no idea. But I only know I'm the only blonde person in my family. And mom never would say, like, when I was born or what. So I don't know where I came from, really. But I'm not an indigo. I would not be capable of catching the arrow in my navel chakra, however.
Well, you never know. You never
Like,
know.
we can't do without you. You are it. I'm not kidding. You
Oh,
know the
that's.
thesis about the indigo children nowadays? The psychics, the
Yeah. Oh,
aliens.
yes. No, I know of them. Yes,
So
yes.
that my Ninas loves that, and there's all these people, and there are all these young beings coming from other worlds, who are helping us pass this crisis, want to help us pass this crisis. They're called indigos.
Yeah.
And I think you were an early indigo, for sure. I mean, that's unearthly to catch the arrow in the navel chakra. No wonder your parents were worried.
Well, I also really love that you.
Wonderful.
Oh, go ahead.
It's wonderful, I'm just saying.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I also love what you're saying about like narrative. And I do think, after this election, many of us realized, how much, I mean, we knew, but I think even more how much people are getting almost all their news from social media. not even going sometimes to even traditional news sources anymore whatsoever. And so I think, certainly at We Can and many of us, in our social and climate justice movements and spiritual conversations are saying, narrative, narrative, narrative. We've got to really put so much more energy into telling the stories and to being in different places than we may not be accustomed to because
Yes.
we need to move the heart as well as the mind. And that happens a lot to stories, as you know so well.
Yes. Well, no, I don't get you. I'm learning a lot of stories from you. Fantastic. Really. And your whole thing about the Ukraine and being nomads and also the Jewish people being nomads. Nobody really appreciates. I don't know if you know who Peter Berger was, a great sociologist of religion. He wrote The Sacred Canopy. And he challenged me years ago. We used to have a lot of dialogues. He was a great friend of mine, to find a connection between God, the monotheistic Abrahamic God, and emptiness. The Buddhist idea of emptiness, ultimate reality as freedom. Emptiness meaning negation or freedom. And he surrendered. He agreed. He challenged me, and I won the challenge. But. And that came, I think, from the nomadism, where the Jews had an idea of God as something you can't seize and grasp. And I love that you have Hee Ho in there. You put
Yeah.
he. I was so hard. You really got that one. The male and female instead of this all male.
Exactly.
You
Yes.
know, banishing Shekinah only to show up on Shabbat. You know, she can
Yeah.
only come back for a minute, and then she got to go run and be a Holy Ghost. You know, that's a Christian. They dig up the demented Holy Ghost idea. Father, Son, Holy Ghost. What? The Holy Ghost has the womb for the Son? What is this? You know, ridiculous. So the nomadic thing against the sort of idols in the Babylon and, you know, the sort of beehive type human communities, the wandering ones who are out there with sky and earth, you know. I love that you have that. But that's one tiny thing. Let me say this. There's this one sentence where you have, where you say, however, the manner in which all these universe cycles might have begun cannot be addressed within the construct of linear time, because again, we would still require an actual beginning moment for the multiple universes. So this one, but the cycle is linear time in cycles. And also there's the whole problem of the origin is something to not be sucked into, because beginninglessness is not a problem. Do you know, it
Yes,
doesn't harm. In
I
fact, it's
agree.
an opening. And all of the pretenders who want to dominate your mind with their domineering worldview claim that they know when the beginning is, and the high priest is in charge of that beginning, you know. And the Big Bang is the last materialist effort at doing that, and it's a bunch of BS, the Big Bang, you know. No, and the key point that the materialists don't get is, which is their root, you know, the revelation of their psychosis is that nothing or nothingness is precisely nothing. They don't get that. You can't make something out of nothing. You make it out of something previously. Like, you know, the most amazing creativity machine being the female body of the human being, or any mammal really, but the human being particularly, because it's such a complex creation with this amazing nervous system and brain and sensitivity and intelligence in a frail and vulnerable body, makes that out of tuna fish, you know, out of genes, you know, out of also the soul gene of the previous, I mean, karma. I won't get. We can have another conversation about karma. I would love to have with you, but I never mind that. But the key is, therefore, let's not cater to this effort to pretend that the scientists are the new high priests, and that they have, and that they are, that they have the beginning, and they're black holes. You know, something we'll be scared of. And they know about black hole. They just listen. Vera Rubin, do you know who she is?
Yes.
Sister Vera Rubin. She showed them that there's all this dark matter and energy, maybe 10 times more than the light matter and energy, the female, the yin, you know,
Yes.
dark power, that is more powerful and holds the right one, the white one, in behavioral, ordinary, or, you know, orderly and friendly swirlings, you know, and stronger than them. And there may even be something stronger than that, beyond light and dark, but never mind that. But I'm just saying, the nothingness thing, let's not get in, don't let them get you with that one, okay? That's all.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah, I think that I think the part that I find really healing is for, whether we talk about, scientists claiming, Western scientists, let's say, claiming knowledge of, maybe the beginnings of the universe in some explicit way. One, I would really invite indigenous worldviews as to also look at different ways of knowing. But I think the part that I'm really interested in that I find really healing for people is that mostly, other than maybe we're in third grade in school or something, and we hear about the solar system and that we're in a solar system in a galaxy, you sort of get introduced to that, and unless you are actually studying, astronomy or something, it's really never discussed again. And so my interest is, certainly having been with a lot of indigenous peoples and been with local communities around the world, one thing I find is that there's always like a ritual or ceremony every year that talks about the beginning of time in memory and moving us forward into today. And I find that to be really important because just the fact is we know that our bodies are made up of the element of the stars and how we're actually
For sure.
physiologically and connected to the cosmos. And then, the actual science and evolution of, self and so forth on our planet. And going through that story, whether we talk about it scientifically or spiritually or mythologically, the best all combined, it helps us if we do that on an annual basis in an embodied way to remember that we're here on this living planet and part of this great unfolding Earth lineage story. And it really changes the context of, the over focus on, people just remembering last year or 5 years ago, or the United States of America is actually a very new concept and new country. And so to get ourselves into this much larger cosmological frame is part of a maturing process that we have to remember on a regular basis to situate ourselves to then be as full as we can be and have hearts and minds and spirits big enough to embrace this moment. So, that's really sort of the wave that I like to ride on understanding, how we think about and situate ourselves in these origin stories, not so much, to define the certain moment in time, but rather to remember how much larger we are as a human species in relationship to the plants and animals that are our relatives that we need to respect as equal beings in sentient life. And so, this is the story that I feel often is so missing.
Listen, thank you so much. I think we're sort of running it toward the time thing. And we could go on, and I have so much to learn from you. I'm learning it from the book. And I salute you as the woman who, from the earliest age, you have a star in your navel chakra. Actual blazing supernova flame of justice and love and creativity. And I salute you. And you're we can. We can. Yes, we can. That's absolutely
Yes, we
the right
can.
word. And I look forward to your success in this. And the fact that although it looks like as bad as it can get almost, it will survive, it will happen. Did you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen a map of the Russian Empire when it deconstructs itself, how many nations there will be throughout Eurasia?
No, I have to say, I've not seen that.
32, 32 plus, of course, Ukraine and Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan, who already broke out of the so-called Federation, which is
Yeah.
not just still the Russian Empire, really, but another 31. And then the origin one is, of course, Muscovia, which is the one that dominates the other 31 and calls itself a single country, Russia, which it isn't. And those local regions will then be able to resurrect their own cultures and their own things, like the Ukrainians are fighting tooth and nail to do, to their own culture there, where your ancestors, more immediate ancestors, came from. And we're on the brink of that because those people are so incompetent, they destroy themselves, and that's going to be the big demonstration of it. Now it looks like they just won a big battle, even in our country, if you actually look at it carefully, who's behind it all, and in other, a lot, Venezuela, I mean, a lot of other countries, and then everywhere is going to be oligarchs forever, it looks like that, but the opposite is the case. We'll see soon, I hope, and you will. You will be the leader of that. You and we can. We'll have to. Then you have to organize the disorganization. Which the State Department people are so scared of. They say, "Oh, we can't do without Russia." That's ridiculous. It's an empire, just like the British one, French one. It has to deconstruct, so they won't dry up the sea of the Azov Ocean. So they won't wreck this and that local place because they don't live there and don't know how to live there. We can't have these empires. Those are the empires, and we can't have them.
It's definitely time to
What?
dismantle and it's time to dismantle and compost these empires and transform.
Exactly.
We
That's the
need
thing.
composting majorly, big
Also,
composting job.
these free clans will come back up, and it will be fine. So anyway, all the best, and thank you so
Thank you.
much.
Thank you for
And I
your
hope we can have another conversation
Yes,
in
and
the
thank you
future.
for your incredible
And
leadership.
good luck with the book. How long has the book been out?
Since earlier this year, so we're just getting started with it going out into the
Right.
world
Yes, that's
here
the way it
again.
is nowadays.
It,
You
yeah.
have to do it yourself because
You just keep going
publishing is
and
ruined by another oligarch. That's Amazon. The normal publishing. I used to do book tours. Now you got to do it yourself. And that's the way it is. But you're doing great. Thank you so
thank
much.
you.
Okay.
Thank you for taking time with me. Thank you for
Oh,
all
I
the good
love
that
it.
you're
I
bringing to the
just
world,
love
and
it.
I look forward to
Just
staying in
beginning.
touch.
Just the beginning. Take
Thank
care.
you. Thank you.
Thank you. All the best.
The Bob Thurman Podcast is produced through a Creative Commons No Derivatives license. Please be sure to like, share, and repost on your favorite social media platforms. And is brought to you in part through the generous support of the Tibet House US Menla membership community and listeners like you. To learn more about the benefits of Tibet House membership, please visit our websites at thus.org, menla.org, and bobthurman.com. Tashi Dalek, and thanks for tuning in.